Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, officials. I thought we should start so that we can finish on time. My name is Nokawe Mafu. I'm the chairperson of Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. What we have done is that because today's presentation is also, it impacts also on the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. We then thought that let's invite them and have a joint sitting. And I just want to really welcome my colleague, the chairperson of COFTA, Honorable Ntakane, the honorable members that are serving on this Portfolio Committee that have joined us. And we hope that you will enjoy our warm welcome. We want to apologize for the earlier confusion that some of the members, Honorable Mtakana, were here early at 9, and then we had to tell them to come back at 11, because the meeting of earlier at 9 was mainly about human settlement issues, and then this one was starting at 11, but there was some confusion in terms of communication. So we just wanted to make that apology up front. We had earlier requested a meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, but that meeting was cancelled due to other plans. And then today, because when we were dealing with our threat plan and annual performance plan, there was an issue that kept on creeping to us on the issue of the backyard dwellers and how we respond to that. And the department, when we were interrogating this, then responded to us and said SALGA has got a document that they had developed on this, but them as a department don't have that document, SALGA has. So we felt then that the SALGA must come and present to us this document, but because it's a SALGA document, we then thought that let's extend the invitation as well to COFTA to come. So that's the main reason why it's a joint session. So there's only really one item on the agenda. It is about that document that has been developed by SALGA on the issue of the backyard dwellers. We all know we are responsible as to do oversight as human settlement around the issue of houses and settlement of people. But at the end of the day, local governments, where they are responsible for development of these. So at some point, our work coincides. So we thought then that let's put our heads together and have this presentation as one. Well. So that's the main reason why the meeting is adjourned. So I thought I must just do that clarity. Thank you very much. So that's, I'm going to hand over, therefore, to SALGA to do the presentation. I'm hoping that everybody has got a copy, that it has been circulated, and then what I would want to do, maybe, because some of us, we see each other in the house and we don't know who's who, we are going to just start by introduction, just to make everybody a little bit relaxed and calm. I'm Nokawe Mafu, as I've already said, I'm the chairperson of Portfolio Committee of Human Settlement.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Lungi Mganga Sabashe, a member of Human Settlement Committee.
Thank you, Chair. I am Lumi Sokamba, Dumso 180, member of the Portfolio.
Kale Wadumela, Kili Fuharai, Sikosa Committee, and I am Samasa.
Thank you, Chair. I am Batiswa Bam Mugwanya, member of the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement.
Sanbonan, Ekamang Ketamabala Stole, Oilumala Committee.
Matash Legana, Human Settlement.
Morning, Tanya Baker, Human Settlement Portfolio.
David Matsipe, Cocta.
Baba Panga, Cocta. Mr. Kubisa, Mamba no Cocta.
Kevin Marlin, Cocta.
Richard Mdarane, Cocta.
Hello, Chinese Department of Human Settlement.
Chantal Harry Gobin, Selga.
Johan Rademeyer, Selga.
Good morning, my name is Alison Shangana. I'm with Selga.
Thank you very much. I want to make a slight comment, Sam Dagane. We're looking at Cocta. We see it's all males. Where are the females?
Only one.
Thank you.
I think we must take more from your.
Yeah, I think so. We need to talk. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm going to hand over therefore to Salka. They will know how to do the presentation, but yeah, over to you, Salka.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of Parliament, colleagues. I would just like to introduce our team. As we said, I'm Johan Rademeyer. I am also from the municipality of Drakenstein, just down the road. The lady on my right hand side, Alice Shangana, and she's our human settlements expert at National. And on my left hand side, Chantal Harry-Gobin, she's our program manager for MIS, Selga Western Cape. The bottom end there.
That's how you do it in local in Cocta?
Sorry, Chair.
Okay. And the lady that was standing there? Okay. Okay, you are our invitees. You're going to do things according to our way of doing them. Okay. Here we behave. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to introduce two young ladies at the back end there. It's Karen Taviti from our Selga Parliamentary Office as well. Madam Chair, thank you very much for having us today. I think it is very important. And driving me to Cape Town this morning, I thought it was a very pertinent day for us to gather to discuss a very, very important issue. This is the time of the year where I personally lie awake at night and I think about children that sleep cold and wet and that goes to school maybe hungry and cold and wet. And the only mission that we should have is how do we solve that problem. It is most probably one of the biggest challenges that we have in our country, and I am really glad that we have the whole portfolio committee here this morning so that we can try and put our heads together for a plan to go forward. I'm extremely glad that the minister is here as well this morning because he's the man that has to drive everything for us, but I am also glad that he's here to hear our inputs, because I think it's very important that we share whatever information we have available, best practices, things that we've seen at work, things that we've seen that don't work at all, that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. And as I said, this is an extremely important issue. And looking at the country as a whole, I get around the country quite a bit. And wherever I come, I have a look at what they're doing there, and I try and take home from what I see and try and implement it where we are, if it is worthwhile implementing. And for that reason, I am going to hand you over to Alison immediately. As I said, she's the specialist in this field. We will be chipping in here and again, now and again, if I think it's necessary or if I want to add something. But thank you very much once again for the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lange. Over to you, Ms. Alison.
Okay. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Just hang on. Allison. Honorable Solis.
Chairperson, thank you for the interruption. Sorry for interruption. My Chairperson, I have a concern because I hope that we will have a special head of SALCA. Now I see some of it are the officials of SALCA, especially they are all from Western Cape. I just need to get clarity to Chairperson.
Chairperson, can we just correct? Allison is from SALCA National, and she's an actual fact, our specialist in this field.
Ms. Allison Shangane is SALCA National. Mr. Rademeyer is SALCA in Western Cape. So they have got the full mandate from SALCA. Let's hear the presentation. And then I hear what you are saying, but the presentation is the way we had requested is that they have sent the specialist that can do the presentation on this item, on this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Okay, I will proceed with the presentation. As I said, I hope that everybody has a copy. I have one extra copy if it's needed. Okay, what I'm going to do today is to walk you through the work that SALCA has done in cooperation with the National Department around the issue of backyarders and backyard dwellings. And I'll take us through the background and some of the research that we've done and the main messages coming from that, and then some of the proposed policy responses from a municipal level that we're suggesting in our position paper. We started our work around backyarders in 2013 when we commissioned some research that was done by David Gardner and Margot Rubin at the time. It's quite comprehensive research to look at all the work that had been done around backyarding in South Africa, but also to take an international perspective. So it included 14 case studies of municipalities in South Africa, as well as 4 international case studies. And that research served as our evidence base for developing a position paper for municipalities and local governments. That research paper was distributed to the committee, so I hope you do have a copy of that in addition to the position paper. So based on the research and the evidence, we then developed a draft organized local government position on backyarding. And we took that draft position that was developed in consultation with the National Department, we took it on a roadshow in the end of 2013. And we held workshops in every single province and invited all municipalities and provincial departments to give us their input around both the research and the draft position paper. The position paper was subsequently revised and taken to our National Executive Committee, whereby it was approved in the beginning of 2014 and became our official organized local government position around backyarding. We then took it to the technical MINMEC for human settlements in July, where it was roundly supported. And there was actually a resolution taken that the department wanted a task team to be developed to take it forward, and we'll be doing that. In the process, during 2013, a draft national policy was developed by the National Department that is in line with what I will present today. And as I understand it, and our colleagues from the National Department can speak to that if required, but that draft national policy is still in the internal processes of the department. But we developed it, we're well aware of that draft policy, we were part of the input to it, and it's completely in line with the position paper I'm presenting today. So I won't go through a lot of statistics, but just to remind ourselves that 1.25 million households are living in backyards at this point, which is nearly 9% of total households. And that's coming from a place where reminding ourselves also that about a quarter of households in South Africa are renting at this point as opposed to ownership. Now, I think one of the key points to note from the census as well is that we often have the impression that all backyard units are informal. But the census has told us that about 43% of all backyard structures are actually formally constructed. So it's almost 50-50 in terms of formal and informal structures. Now, when we did our work, we realized, of course, that we need to have some sort of operational definition, and I'm not going to go through the details of this, but anticipating a question around this, the definition that we used for backyarding, and you can come up with any definition. I'm sure there are 40 people in this room, and we could have 40 definitions for backyarding. But the backyarding definition that we used was speaking to small-scale activity, to private rental, private small-scale rental, operated either by separate, or sorry, occupied either by separate households or by family members. So we're talking about both situations. Okay. And also to emphasize that what we're speaking about is residential use of the backyard unit, and not as much about commercial or retail space, okay, plaza shops, etc. Now the form or type of those backyard units could obviously change and be very different from location to location. So in a more upscale, formal neighborhood, you're going to have the formal granny flat, which officially, of course, is a backyard unit. But what we're speaking about today is the lesser, lower income areas, where you either have formal or informal structures in the back. What we didn't cover through our research is backyard rental, so to speak, in informal settlements. And the reason being that that would be addressed through your upgrading of informal settlement program as a whole, and upgrading of the entire area. So what we're talking about here is rental units used for residential space, okay, and private areas, okay, and lower income areas. Now just quickly to remind ourselves again that when we're thinking about this particular submarket of the rental market, which is backyard units, there's a dynamic in this market. Right? And in terms of the demand is coming from a whole bunch of different types of people and different types of households. And I think one of the key things that came out of our research is you can't make assumptions about backyard dwellers. You can't say that they're all students, or they're all third generation staying in the back, or they're all on the waiting list, or they're all foreigners. Okay? It's going to vary significantly from neighborhood to neighborhood. And that if a municipality is going to develop any kind of response, they need to understand the specifics of backyarders in their area. So these households could be one or two members. They could be many more than that. They could be people who qualify for subsidized housing and are on the waiting list, or people who don't qualify for whatever reason. Could be people who are employed and potentially fall into the gap market. It could be people that have a house somewhere else and are in the city for either seeking employment or because they are employed in the city. So the need could be for temporary or for short-term accommodation or for long-term ownership or rental. It really depends on who you're speaking about, and again, we can't make assumptions. Now, for speaking about the landlords, there's obviously two reasons people let out space in the back. It's either for profit and for the income, the additional income, in whatever form it comes, or it's basically social reasons. It's using the space for extended family members or close friends. Now, I mentioned that in our research, we did 14 case studies of municipalities, and if you go back to the research, you can see all of those case studies. And the case studies we did, specifically, we wanted to look at situations from one end of the spectrum to the other. So places where municipalities in the province had intervened and tried to do something in response to backyard units, and situations where municipalities have done absolutely nothing, and everything in between. Okay, so there are 14 case studies. Now, if we kind of group them a little bit, there are some basic responses that municipalities have had since 1994 around this or earlier. A lot of municipalities are taking this sort of laissez-faire approach. We're just going to ignore the problem. Okay? We're not going to do anything. We're not going to enforce our bylaws. We're not going to have any specific intervention targeted to this market. We're just going to leave it alone. In some areas, you see a completely different response, which is the opposite. It's eradicating these structures, tearing them down, not allowing illegal structures, enforcing the bylaws. Now, obviously, the negative of that is that you have families that are displaced and no longer have their homes. An in-between approach would be around building control. So you do allow some units, but under strict conditions that are regulated. So only approved units that meet minimum norms and standards. And a good example of that right now is Cosmo City, where you do have a lot of backyard units, but it's been strictly controlled. Now, a fourth area was an approach where services were improved in municipal stock, municipal rental stock. And our two colleagues from the City of Cape Town are here today, and they can speak a little bit more about this approach, I think, if required. But it was quite an innovative approach in two or three areas in Cape Town,
where essentially they started with the low-hanging fruit, which is the municipal rental stock. Situations where you had backyarders staying in the back of rental stock that was owned by the municipality. Now, what the city did was they came in and they first of all upgraded the bulk to cover the services requirements of those who were staying in the backyard, and they used the USDG for that purpose. They added additional refuse bins, and then they put in a service connection in the back, both for electricity and for water and sanitation. And they had a very innovative technology that allowed essentially the free basic service allotments to multiple households that were staying in the back. So you essentially got a tag that you used when you were using the water, and then you would pull against your own free basic service allotments for your water use. So what the process did was it allowed the city to have a direct free basic service relationship with the households that were staying in the back. Now, another response was one that was taken in Gauteng, specifically in Zola and Orlando East. And this was a pilot project that was done a number of years ago by the province. It's quite controversial. What they did was they came into the area, they knocked down all the backyard structures in the back, whether there were 2 or 7 or 10, and put up 2 formal units with a joint wash basin and toilet. Okay. Now, what happened was a number of unintended negative consequences. So you had displacement of households, essentially. Because if you had 8 households staying in the back, and then you knock down all those structures and only put up 2, they left it to the owner of the house to decide who would stay in those 2 units. So you had households displaced, was one effect. Second effect, of course, is that you've reduced the number of rental units in the back, which means not only have you displaced the households, but by simple market forces, the owner is going to up the rent for those 2 units because previously they got 8 income streams, now they're getting 2, okay? And that can cause further displacement. You also saw owners putting in their family members instead of tenants because now the unit was upgraded. So there were a whole number of issues that happened as a result of that pilot project, and it's a real opportunity for us to learn. And I think the research that Saga did tells us that the main message there was that it's very easy to have unintended negative consequences if we intervene in this market. And if we go in and eradicate all the structures and we put up a reduced number of formal units, you're going to have displacement. Either through the families that can no longer stay in the back and also the increased rentals. So the message that we got from that was that actually intervening in the top structures is incredibly dangerous because of the fragility of the market. And I'll speak more to that. The other 2 ways that municipalities have been responding is through using land use management tools, zoning tools, to manage and control backyard units. And also an innovative process that was in approach that was used in Alexandra in K206, which was they built RDP BNG units, but in addition to the 40 square meters, there was 2 rental rooms that were also put on the property, so that the BNG beneficiary received not only the ownership of the house, but also an income stream by virtue of having 2 units in the back. Now, there were lots of equity issues around that. Who gets the rental unit versus who gets the house? Right? Why should I pay rent when the person I'm paying rent to got their house for free? Who gets to select who the tenant is in the back? Is it the owner or is it the state that built the property and built the unit? So there were lots of issues around that as well. But again, an innovative approach. So given all of these case studies, we then wanted to say to ourselves, well, what actually is the problem? Because we tend to assume that backyarding in and of itself is bad. So from a local government perspective, what actually is the problem? Well, first of all, many of the structures are illegal, right? They contravene bylaws. Secondly, just leaving aside the legal framework, many of the structures can be unsafe and unhealthy. The third issue may be that the structures are fine, but the access to basic services is not adequate. Now, those are three completely separate issues already, and not all of them are necessarily present in any backyard situation. The fourth issue from the perspective of the municipality is that due to the densification and the number of households staying in the back and the increased use of the services, you may have overburdening of the bulk infrastructure. Again, our research showed that we tend to assume that this is happening, but it's not always true in every area where there's a high degree of backyarding. So again, municipalities would need to look carefully at a particular area and the capacity of the bulk. And then the fifth issue really is the perception problem itself. Many municipalities approach backyarding as just simply negative, something to be eradicated, as opposed to thinking about how it can be a tool for densification and it's a supply of affordable rental in areas, well-located areas. Now, once a municipality in South Africa decides that they want to do some sort of intervention around backyard rentals, they then have a number of secondary problems that they're dealing with. The first being, right now, there isn't a specific policy or a funding framework. There's no funding stream coming through the HSDG, the USDG, et cetera, that will help a municipality do this kind of intervention right now. We need to jig that system. The second issue is the double subsidy question. So if we use state funds in a private backyard, and that house was already a BNG house, then we're talking about a double subsidy question. So then there's the equity issues involved. And that was what Joburg already dealt with when they had this situation of building a BNG house and adding rental units as well. I already spoke about the unintended negative outcomes. And of course, the fourth issue is that many of the municipalities at present don't have the capacity or the resources to enforce as well. Okay, so given all of this, we then said, we probably need to answer a broader question about, as local government, where do we see backyarding going? What role do we see it having in human settlements development overall? That's a question we need to answer before we proceed any further. So is this a problem we need to eradicate, or what role do we see it playing? So we developed a response to that question, and I think it's an important platform for the development of any national policy and an overall countrywide approach. We basically said, look, backyarding is not unique to South Africa. You see it in many shapes and forms all over the world. Because basically people are moving into cities, they're seeking employment, and they need some sort of transitional entry point into the city. And that's what backyarding serves. It's affordable rental. Now, of course, that having been said, in South Africa there's a particular historical legacy as well. And we need to recognize that growth of backyarding has been a result also of failures in our government subsidized housing policy that hasn't provided enough affordable rental in well-located areas for people. So the vision that we're putting forward is to say that we don't see backyard dwellings ever being completely eliminated from the landscape, and that that actually shouldn't be our goal. What we want to see is that they wouldn't be fully eradicated, but would continue to play a limited and managed role in providing access to cities. So it would be a temporary option for some residents, but shouldn't be a forced long-term reality for households. In other words, you'd want to see people moving into a city and being able to stay in the back, students, job seekers, etc. But you don't want to see situations where people are stuck third generation in the backyard when they don't want to be. That would be our vision. So our aim then is to slow the growth of backyard units and to improve the quality of the accommodation for existing tenants without over-regulating and formalizing. Because if we over-regulate and formalize, we're going to reduce the number of units that are available. Okay, and that's going to displace households. As I said, our research and experience has shown, and we have the lessons right here from South Africa, that if government interferes with this highly sensitive market, the result is going to be a loss in social cohesion and a reduction in the supply of cheap, well-located rental accommodation. So we want to manage and limit and improve the situation of those currently staying in backyards without taking a formalization eradication approach. Now, I think it's important, of course, to note as well, particularly in the context of the Rental Housing Amendment Act, that we are stuck with a very difficult situation here as a policy issue, which, of course, is that many households are staying in situations that are not safe, that basic rights are not being met in terms of services. And we can't ignore that as government. On the other hand, if we come in and completely formalize and eradicate, we run the danger of displacing households. So it's a real balancing act. We have to do something because we can't ignore the situation that backyard tenants are in situations where it is bad. We can't address informal settlement dwellers and ignore the situation of backyard tenants. On the other hand, we can't go in but guns blazing and formalize across the board, or we're going to have displaced households and disrupt the market. So having done that work, we then set out some principles, and I'm not going to go through these in detail because I think I've already spoken to them. We said, look, we need to remember that this can have negative outcomes, backyarding can. There are situations, certainly, where households are not in safe living contexts. Okay? Their quality of life is not acceptable. That having been said, backyarding can be a critical and useful delivery mechanism for rental units, and can be part of a densification approach within urban development. We need to remember that this is an income stream, an important critical income stream for many homeowners. It serves the social function of keeping extended families together and allowing them to be close, nearby, to support each other. But if we come in with a heavy-handed approach, we can easily have a negative effect as opposed to a positive one. And also, as well, and I mentioned this earlier, that we have to keep in mind always that backyarding is a complex and highly differentiated situation. So we don't have, we as SOLGA cannot suggest one silver bullet that will work in all municipalities and all neighborhoods where there are backyards. It's going to have to be innovative approaches. It's going to have to be a basket of interventions, and we draw on the one that makes the most sense for a particular area. I spoke already, I think, to the limited regulation and to the issue of the double subsidy. Okay, so we said as well that currently the national policy is not meeting the needs. Ideally, the CRU and the social housing programs would meet the need for rental, but we're not seeing that right now, and there are efforts underway, important efforts, to revise both those programs. But what we're not seeing is the kind of large-scale delivery in those programs that would meet this need. And frankly, even if social housing and CRU were ramped up tomorrow to meet the need of those who are eligible, there's still households staying in backyards who are not eligible for housing subsidy programs. So here's the suggested approach that we're putting forward. We are not advising municipalities to undertake programs to de-densify backyard rental and to formalize. That has not been our advice at SOLGA to our member municipalities. We're saying do not take the approach that Joburg took in terms of knocking down backyard structures and building limited amount of formalized top structures in backyards. Saying don't do that. We're saying instead what makes sense is a twofold approach. Increase services to those who are staying in backyards and use indirect interventions which create the kind of environment and incentives for the landlords themselves to improve the quality of life. Those are the two overall approaches that we're proposing and that our municipalities have endorsed. What I want to do now is just focus on specifically what our policy proposals are and the proposed interventions. What are the tools we're saying would make sense? What we've done as we present this is to organize this discussion according to this sort of quadrant. So bear with me for a second. There are two separate discussions that we're having. The first is how do you improve the living condition of those who are currently staying in backyards? That's the part on the left. The second question is, how do you improve the supply of decent, affordable rental units in backyards? That's the greenfield or infill question. So how do you improve the situation of those currently staying in backyards on the left and on the right? How do you think about encouraging affordable backyard rental in greenfields or in infill? So those are the two. Now, if we're going to consider those two types of interventions, the first question you're going to ask yourself, is it state land or private land that you're talking about? Because that makes all the difference in terms of what you can do as a municipality. Now, let me give you an example. I mentioned that the Cape Town had done the services approach, right? Well, they didn't do it on private land because it's a very thorny issue to go do that on private land. They started with the low-hanging fruit, which was to take the municipal rental stock and improve the services in the backyard. So that's an example of where they used, they started with the municipal land because legally, in terms of interventions, policy, et cetera, it's much easier. So essentially, we then have four quadrants, right? Interventions to improve the quality of people staying in backyards currently on state land and private land, and then improving the supply of adequate rental, backyard rental, on state and private land. And I'm just going to go through each of those four and tell you what we're specifically suggesting to municipalities as viable options to consider. Now, if we're taking the top left quadrant there, then we're talking about improving the situation of current backyarders on state land. Now, the proposal in our position paper is to limit those interventions to improving access to services. Don't touch the top structures. If we touch the top structures, we will likely displace. So we're saying limit your intervention to improving access to services. And that would be putting in essentially additional refuse removal bins and installing a single on-site connection in the backyard that would provide water, sanitation, electricity with separate metering from the main house. And if you have the right technology, it would allow separate metering for the different households who stay in the back if there's multiple households in the backyard. That's along the lines of the Cape Town approach. And that would also need to likely possibly involve the upgrade of the vault as well. Now, currently, the suggestion that we're making is that USDG and MIG would be used for that. So we're in discussions with COGSA around whether MIG could be used for this purpose, and we've also been speaking to the Department of Human Settlements around whether the USDG policy and conditions would allow its use for this purpose as well. Now, the benefit of this approach, just to remind you again, is that it allows direct access by the backyarders to the free basic services offered by the municipality. So a lot of the concerns around backyarding currently is that there's one allotment of free basic services for the entire earth, right? And the main homeowner uses it up, right? And then charges for services to those in the back. Now, if you put in a separate connection, a single service connection in the back for the backyarders, it allows the municipality to have a direct relationship with them. And if they're eligible and qualified, then the municipality can provide a separate set of free basic services to those in the back. So you're pursuing our outcome aid objectives of thinking about provision of basic services to poor households. Now, if you're talking about those currently backyarders on private land, it gets a lot more tricky. Because if we're going to do the same thing, then the first thing you'd have to do is knock door to door and get written permission from every single landlord to install services in the back. Time intensive, potentially legally problematic. The second issue, of course, is that arguably, if you're talking about a former BNG settlement, then you're dealing with a double subsidy issue as well. Because you're providing a service in the back when you've already built the house for free and given it to the beneficiary. Now, our proposal here is that if municipalities are going to do that, they go ahead and obtain the landlord's permission to install a single on-site connection in the backyard in the same way that we suggested for state-owned lands, using the MIG, the USDG, or the HSDG funds. And again, this approach would require some revisions to the existing policies. You would have to have or develop some sort of pro forma contractual document that would be between the homeowner and the municipality in terms of providing those services on the private land. And you would also have to, as a municipality and from a policy perspective, accept that it's a double subsidy. And I think you can make, we're arguing that you can make the case because you are extending basic services to poor households and you're upgrading the area as a whole. So in the trade-off, we would argue that that is a valid use of the public funds. Now, another option that has come up for situations of private lands with backyard tenants is to develop some sort of affordable credit product that would be targeted to the landlords. And we've actually been in discussions with CUHF around this. And the idea would be to provide some sort of loan to those private landlords so that they themselves can use the funds to improve the top structures or the services. Again, this is an indirect intervention. So we don't have the same difficulties in terms of displacement. Still thinking about, now we're shifting to, instead of talking about existing backyard tenants, we're talking about greenfield areas, how we can encourage affordable backyard rental in greenfield areas, or in areas where you have large plots that don't currently have backyard units but are well located. Now thinking about state lands, there are a number of sort of technical approaches that we can take that municipalities can start implementing tomorrow. Firstly, creating settlement layouts in greenfield projects, new housing projects, which facilitate and enable backyard dwellings. So in terms of the stand layout, where you place the house, instead of putting it smack dab in the middle, put it on the back, put it on the front so that the one can build easily around it. Okay. The house design itself can make it easier to add a room. And in terms of municipalities thinking about the design service specifications for new developments, we can think about planning for excess or bulk capacity to allow for the growth that will happen in backyards inevitably. Planning for separate water, electricity, and sewerage connections for backyard units. And planning for separate metering for services as well. These are all proactive things that municipalities can do in the development of greenfield projects that recognizes that backyard units will be inevitable. And we're not going to stop it. So let's think about how to manage its growth and make sure that the backyard tenants who move in are accommodated. They're in safe structures, right, and they have the services. Still on state-owned land, another idea that's been put forward and that is also included in the draft national policy from the department is the idea of, in a BNG house, also including a raft foundation in the back. So you have your BNG house, and in the back there's also a foundation that is installed by the state. Now the idea here is that the beneficiary of the main house would then use their own funds, either borrowed or savings, to put up the top structure. So there's some sort of co-sharing, co-creation that's going on with the beneficiary. This, of course, would require a change in the current HSDG policy and the housing code. But the key benefit here is that you're then giving the beneficiary two things. You're giving them a house and a potential income stream. Now, of course, you're going to have to deal with the equity issue that they had in Alexandra K206 as well, because which beneficiaries get just the house and which get the house and the RAF Foundation? These are policy questions that we'd have to work through. But I think what's appealing here is it's a self-building scheme, essentially, that mirrors what happens in other countries in a number of cases, where essentially the state is assisting with the most expensive piece of the backyard structure and then is relying on the beneficiary, the homeowner, to put up the rest. Now, shifting to private land, again, what we're arguing is that to avoid displacement and to avoid formalization and disruption to this fragile rental market, that we need to focus on indirect intervention as government. Okay? So providing incentives to landlords. One of the ways that a municipality can do that is to facilitate planning and streamline the plan approval procedures. And of course, the BLUMA and the bylaws that municipalities will be developing provides an opportunity to do this. In the design of the bylaws, we can do it in a way that speaks to the issue of backyard. But essentially, the idea is to revise the current approval processes to make it faster, cheaper, and less complicated for a homeowner to go to the municipality and get plans approved for a backyard unit, a decent backyard unit. We can also think about providing technical support for product development aimed at rental landlords. So things like generic product design and development support. The municipality has three sets of standard plans for 1, 2, 3 rooms in a back. And you draw them off the shelf, and you think about how they need to be adapted for your backyard and resubmit them to the municipality. So reducing the cost of the development of those plans. We can think about innovative programs to facilitate access to building materials for the homeowner and to facilitate construction and the marketing, perhaps, of prefabricated units is another option. So again, indirect interventions. We're not going in and building in your backyard. We're making it easier for the homeowner to do so at less expense. Now, when we did our consultation, another idea that keeps popping up, and I include it here because it does keep popping up despite the fact that a lot of people go, when I raise this. Another option that's come forward is that in large plots, the idea is put forward that the municipality subdivides and then purchases the backyard from the homeowner. I'm not sure how viable this would be. There are a whole number of issues related to it. But it is a possibility, and it may be something that we explore more in particular municipalities and think about a pilot around. So just in my final slides, a few general approaches that we can take, specific things that municipalities can do. The city of Cape Town has been innovative in creating a split zoning scheme, okay, where you have the regular residential zone and you also have a residential two zone that allows for an informal structure in the back. And the idea is that you have a progression from residential two to residential one, but essentially you have two zoning schemes existing on one piece of property. So again, an example of an innovative approach that could be rolled out more as municipalities develop their planning bylaws as per BLUMA. Another idea that's been put forward is to relax the building code for secondary units in backyards. Now, DTI is already talking about revising and amending the National Building Regulations Act, and we're in discussions and consultations with them. And it looks like already they've accepted in principle that it may make sense to have a separate set of regulations that could apply to informal structures. Now, this is a dangerous area, and it's tricky, because obviously you need to have very minimum standards to protect the safety of the households who stay in those units. On the other hand, I think that we need to have a taste of reality as well, because these informal structures are not going to go away. And we're not going to have municipalities tomorrow getting up and enforcing every single bylaw and eradicating those structures. And even if they had the appetite to do that and the capacity, we would then have displacement. So I think the recognition here is that short of eradication, what we need to do is accept and, again, try to deliver some sort of regulation, some sort of protection for these units and their occupants, with minimum international standards for safety, particularly around fire and flood. And the last idea that's been put forward that needs a little bit more research and development is the introduction of a new capital grant for landlords. This would be the possibility of some sort of, basically the principle would be equal contribution by the private landlord. So for instance, a subsidy is provided to the landlord to cover half the cost of building the top structure in the back or to cover the raft foundation, and the landlord would need to come up with the other half of the money either through savings or through the affordable credit product that we mentioned earlier. So again, sort of innovative mechanism that would probably need to be implemented via NGOs is my suspicion. So the last two slides are just summary of what our main proposals are for each of those four quadrants that I suggested. That I organized the discussion into. Again, thinking about two separate pathways. One is improving the conditions of those who are currently living in backyards, and the second is thinking about how to manage this going forward proactively. But I think the main message that has come out of the research and that I would just want to conclude with is that dabbling as a state, dabbling in the top structures and formalizing, what we've learned is that will disrupt the market. And that while we go in with good intentions, the likelihood is that what we'll see is that households are pushed out of their homes because the rent goes up or there's no longer the number of units in the back, and they move into informal settlements or elsewhere. So that we absolutely need to do something about backyarding, and we absolutely need to make sure that the conditions of those living in backyards are improved and that their basic services are addressed and their rights are addressed. But formalizing is not going to do it. So the approach that we're taking is a compromise, and it's addressing the services issue while also proactively thinking as we move forward, how do we make sure that new backyard units meet those minimum standards and ensure quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Changana. Any addition from SALGA delegation? No, I'm sharing the meeting. I'm just asking, any addition? Do you have any addition to make? Okay. Any addition, ma'am? Thank you. I know, Honorable Masondo, you want to ask questions. I want to first ask the department, do you want to do any additions? Mr. Neville, before I open it up for clarities and questions, has this presentation been done to COPTA?
No.
So they are hearing it for the first time. Okay.
Sorry, Chair, let me interrupt. That's actually incorrect. We did do a national stakeholder meeting in January of last year, and it was presented there, but it was at official level. We haven't gone to MINNEC.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Now, I was just checking if they are at an advantage stage. Oh, yeah, thank you very much. And questions of clarity? Honorable Masonda, I know you had your hand up. Honorable Mbanga, you'll follow. Honorable Tabasha, you'll follow.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to begin off by saying that it's quite encouraging. So I start on a positive note, that at least there is an attempt now to think through this matter and to have some policy in place. So that's my positive note. It's very encouraging, because for a long time this matter has not been dealt with in any sort of way. I know that there are many documents, and there are some documents in place, almost like all over the show and so on. But I think that this will assist in ensuring that there's some sense of certainty as to how we want to deal with the matter. You know, when I was in Joburg, it's an old story. When I was in Joburg, as the mayor there, obviously, one of the issues that kept on really worrying us, and we spent many months grappling with, is the whole question of how to deal with the question of informal settlements. In my mind, the two issues are linked. In other words, there's no way you can discuss backyarding without looking at the total human settlement question. So you're forced to look at the other issue. Now, I want to tell you a very short story. I won't take much of your time. One of the things that we did when I was in Joburg was to employ a certain professor who was the head of the planning department at Vets University. We took him to a place called Kaya Sands. Kaya Sands is one of the informal settlements in 2012. We went through the settlement with him, and he saw it practically. I mean, the problems about sewer, the rubbish in the area, and the works. At the end of that tour, because we used to visit the regions from time to time, at the end of the we imagined the other side of the informal settlement. It was ashen gray. He was so shocked by what he saw there. Now imagine this chap is the professor. He had never been to an informal settlement before. Never ever in his life. He said so to me so many times. You see, one of the problems that we have is that the learned and the experts don't have a sense of reality. You see, as a professor, they haven't been informal settlement. But the problem does not end there. The problem is that the students who go through university have no sense of reality at all. The students, I mean, and it doesn't mean white students. Even the most African of Africans who may come from rural areas and so on have no sense of reality at all. They are trained in such a way that it is assumed that they are going to deal with planned urban settlements. That's the planning. That's the training. That's the training. So we have a problem of the people who are supposed to be very skilled. Knowing almost nothing about the situation that affects the majority of the people in South Africa. So I'm raising that as an important first point so that we realize what it is that we're dealing with. So the first thing that I would say is that we need a policy approach that seeks to ensure that these practical issues are dealt with in some meaningful sort of way. Now, one of the issues that faces us in South Africa is the elimination of informal settlements. Elimination, which is very, very important as part of a vision. Now, one of the things that we need to look at with the team, the Senegal team and the department would do very well to look at, you know, is there's some policy document, I don't know where it is now in terms of development, that was suggesting that we should have service stands made available where we have basic services in place like water, you know, sanitation. Because many places where there are informal settlements, it's not like, I mean, in Msinga or some area like that, the rural areas, the services or the mains, main sewer, main water, can be accessible. So the question of self-assistance, as part of an overall approach, I think it's very, very important. For instance, if I want to build my sister a two-room house, right, and I have the money, I can buy bricks, I can buy cement, and my younger brother is the builder. Can that be made easily doable? So you know, I'm raising an issue that's very, very practical. I have a bit of money now. I want to do something. I don't want. My sister has been waiting for the empty house. It has not come. I won't tell you how many years she's been waiting. But now I want to intervene directly. So the quality issues must also address this particular matter. Linked to this is this whole question of being familiar with some of the problems, such as, for instance, just to give you an example, old human settlements. For instance, in Johannesburg, there's a place called a Trip Town. It's one of the first human settlements to be established in Johannesburg. It was established in the 1890s, before 1900. So you can see how old that place is. Now, and then there's a place called Alexander Township, which was established in 1912. Right? There are similar kinds of places throughout the country where things are in a state of disrepair, to say the least. Now, we need to study those situations because things are very generally just collapsed there. I'm talking Alexander Township, I'm not talking about all the new changes that have come about in Alexander Township and so on. I'm talking about the older Alexander Township. I don't know if you've been to Alex, but those of you who have been there will know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about old Alexander. Because there are similar situations elsewhere. Now, well, I don't want to take too long, the chairperson. But I want to make.
You wanted to take it too long.
I want to make one or two comments. The first one is the thing that if you want to avoid, if you want to know what not to do, you must visit a place called Lagos in Nigeria.
Yeah.
That's my statement on the question of planning and formalization. Of course, I do accept the argument that development by its nature must be is very complex and must be differentiated. But as we do whatever we want to do, let's take into account some of the basics and the challenges that face people on the ground. Thank you very much.
Chair, to me, I'm not going to compliment the presentation. It's so scary. It scares me. As you make this presentation to me, it makes my heart race. You know? Because it's not a good story. I will tell you, and I like because my son is making the example. If you go and take and look into human settlement in Singapore, you put just a picture, the Singapore situation, and you put the one for India, human settlement, I think also countries like Thailand, I remember. How human settlements have developed. You just look there. You see. I don't think it's where we want to go. Really, fighting for freedom, for national liberation. People fought for a better life for all. You see, this model, I'm going to come to this. It's difficult here to ask direct questions here, because this is more complex, as the old man is saying. It's not a... In our committee, we are very cordial on this thing. We... Chair, you must protect us. We are also a committee here. Please, you must... It's a joint committee, this committee. Yeah. No. I agree, Chairperson. I always want to explain the rules where Parliament, because sometimes with students coming to our committee, so they should understand when you talk about joint committee. That's why I don't want my committee to be reduced in a joint meeting. We are equal. What I like to teach, I'm a student, and want students to know in South Africa. That's how we treat. That's why I'm saying, Chair, in situations like this, in a joint committee, you intervene and protect us as this committee.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Now, you know why I'm raising this check? Golden Beatty, early in 1992, and Raymond Schaub, when they came back from prison, very early, there's a place called Seplas there in Port Elizabeth. With a goodwill, they wanted to liberate the people, they found money for building. There, in Seplas, everybody built wherever you wanted to build it, how you want to build it. The sewer there is open. You can walk wherever you walk next to a sewer. It's called the better life. And gentrification happens there. Backyard settlement is there. The chaos doesn't look nice. Is that what we're talking about? Go to I've been in Alex. Go to Alex. How the settlement in Alex is. And you are saying to me, open more backyard settlements in Alex and densify it more and more and put more girls there. Is that the better life we're talking about? That the people of Alex now must have another space and they put their own backyards and put more, and you are going to fund them for them to settle in that particular situation. What about the densification of those areas? My understanding was that the kind of settlement that we have in historical disadvantaged communities, you have to de-densify those areas. I'll use the Port Elizabeth situation, the Seplas I spoke about. We have Chetty on the other part. We have to de-densify Seplas settlement and so on, and move people from other areas in order, because settlements, human settlements, should not only be about houses, should also be amenities around people. Now, you're building in more settlement in better. You are not putting those who settle like that to live for life like that. Let's go to Kukuletu. Kukuletu, most of the people who stay in the freeway here in Cape Town are not from the Cape Town. I understand this refugee thing or what. I'm not talking about that, but most of them move from the Eastern Cape and come to Cape Town. That's a fact, that's reality, that's not politics, it's true. It's like in Johannesburg, most of the people who are in settlement, they come from the Eastern Cape to Johannesburg and KZN to Johannesburg, they're not from there. Migration, that's reality. That's
I'm worried about time.
But you gave him a...
No, I'm not saying stop.
I'm going to be quick, Chair. Now, in Kukuletu, you are saying there are these old mamas and putis who stay in Kukuletu. They have stayed with their parents since 1970, 1961 there. But if you find that in terms of housing development, those people who are born in Kukuletu in Cape Town, they've never been prioritizing projects. Now you are saying those people should continue to live in backyards, in their own homes, family homes. and not attach them to projects. Lastly, government has different models. On the PNG, you have this guest housing that we're talking about, you have the CRU, you have social housing. Social housing target since 2006 has been that it wants to deliver more than 100,000 units, and we have not been delivering that. The money is there. Why CRU? Because the people who are supposed to benefit from backyard dwelling can be accommodated in CRU. And CRU is a better housing settlement than a backyard settlement. And also social housing. Is it because of our lack of capacity in these areas to deliver this? Why can't we look into a simple way of development than putting squatters for our people? In South Africa, you know, in Chile, if they develop this, they first finish this in Chile and then go and do another thing. In South Africa, we want to do everything at the same time. In a very many things, many housing options. We have not finished that one, the first one. Next year, there's going to be a policy statement announcing that we'll do this other one. We have not finished that one. It's not that we do not have the money to do these things, but we want to do as many things as possible. The rental problem in South Africa, I'll tell you about WOMA. The WOMA project that is there, we took 5 years for that project to stand up since we started that department in 2006. 5 years. You know what? Quick scan A, quick scan B, quick scan C by FHI there, by SHA, which was the social housing institution there. Because the processes and the bureaucracy you put for a house to go and be implemented, that's a problem. That's why your social housing is not working. That's why your CRU is not working. Because of this quick scan, I don't know whether they're still there, still quick scan E. Therefore, I'm saying, we must go and revisit really that we need all these models that we have. This one, 2006, I was there, a housing officer. There's nothing that is in place in Port Elizabeth in terms of backyard funding. Therefore, I'm saying we might be talking about this with no clear mechanism to implement it. Therefore, I'm saying we must relook into police whether we need really this. I think this is going to make squatters.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbanga. This is a position paper from SALGA being presented here. It's a position paper from SALGA. We are interrogating a position paper from SALGA. So I must just remind everybody that.
Thank you, Chairperson. In relation to the intervention, for me, the best priority area to start is for us to densificate in a greenfield and buffer zone, where I think that one is clear, is neat, it won't create problems for us. Coming to the construction of flats, before I come to that, the construction of backyard structures within the BNG dwelling and the plot, it might create a problem in terms of aging. Because when those BNG houses, beneficiaries, therefore owners, no longer beneficiaries, because they've received their title deed, then we will be building in a privately owned land, which creates a opinion by the public AGs to say that you cannot spend the government money or the state money in a privately owned property or land. That's the second point. The third point would be in relation to the Pike disease holder, it's written to, it's better if the parents are still alive in with the experience that we have overcome in years. The soon as the siblings are left alone, they fight in most cases over the ownership of the land. Because the other dwelling will be for meant for a rental a category, and the other one is an ownership, but in the same lot. I don't know whether you subdivide, you mean to subdivide by planning, municipal planning, those details are still yet to come. But the danger is that when there is a problem within the family, then who is the owner of the property? That might create a problem that we have prior 1994, where our parents in the so-called four-roomed houses in the townships were not allowed to own a land, but they were able at some stage to buy the bricks and mortar, the structure on top of the land. So you are owning a brick and mortar, but you are not owning a land. The land is owned by the state. Then, in other words, the two families that are here, if I can call them two families, even if they are blood related, they are siblings. The other one is in the holder of the title deed, and the other one doesn't have. That might create a challenge. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but I'm saying we must apply our mind on those challenges. The fourth one would be that if you provide a slab, it's a good thing, as the former mayor there and the honorable member, Baba, former mayor, explains it. It's a good thing. But the other angle that we should caution on is that we're still sitting as human settlements, we're sitting with a problem now. I would like the department to know this, human settlements, that we haven't been able to regulate the government subsidy houses in relation to that. We put regulations that says you can only extend to this structure up to this sizable amount. Because of that, our people are extended upward, downward, whatever, sideways, but upward, my worry is upward. As a double story, the government subsidy house that has been provided. But the foundation or the slab that was provided is not designed to carry a double story house. So we are sitting in a bomb to explode. So if we leave those lands, but we must have something in black and white that says to the beneficiary, you can only put a structure on this foundation, on this land, of so many square meters, so that in future when something happens, the government is not to be blamed. We must tighten our try and deal with the regulations there when we amend regulations to take into consideration all that I've raised. The last thing, Chairperson, we build different products in human settlements for the benefit of all of us. We build different products for different categories of people who are not just everywhere. We are not shortchanging policies every year for different category of the level of the income of our people. That's why you have a free government subsidy house, you'll have a rental stock, you'll have a rent to buy, you'll have something that your bank can give you a loan. So thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ntakane.
No, sir. I wanted to make a point that no policy even if it's so progressive, that doesn't have unintended consequences. I think if we accept that as a rule general, don't give police in my intended consequences, even if it's very progressive. But how do we mitigate the impact of negative impact on that area? To me, it's a separate issue completely. I just think that the presentation is very useful, because the presentation is telling us that we are facing a current situation that is untenable. How do we intervene as policymakers? Because generally, those who are making laws are here. If those who are making laws themselves have got no appreciation of the dilemma that we are facing right now, that a large number of people are unemployed, therefore those who have houses, even four-room houses, they will build some backyard areas. Their main intention is to have some resources for them to survive with their children. You can't stop it, I guess, even if you can deploy all the police and the army. You can't stop that. It's a natural process of any urbanizing society. It happens everywhere. Then how do we then deal with the manner that we manage urbanization? I think that's the point that I raised. That we must manage this, because it's a phenomenon internationally happens. In fact, anyway, I saw one of your brother also in the Mediterranean Sea couldn't cross. But depends, I think migration will happen every time. Therefore, how do we ensure that we manage it? I think that's the paper that is presented. How do we ensure that we preempt it in some of the ways? Because unless, in my view, I know that I differ with Honorable Masuku here. Of course, he's a rural man. He's a rural man, enough land, everything is there. There's no backyard dweller. He had no appreciation how in Alexander's situation is. I think the point that Obama Masuku is saying that it's important for those who are designing laws, who are drafting policies, also to go and see the practical situation, because we become better by seeing this. And I hope that Mama Chuka is pretty surprised that there are people who are backyards in Soweto. He ran away from Soweto since 1976, never came back. Therefore, you have no appreciation of the challenge that you are facing there. My view here is that we should accept that it is a good attempt to start provoking us to have a real discussion around the issue of human settlement and how should the local government respond on a continuing urbanization and migration of our people everywhere they will migrate. I think it's very clear on that. And how do we ensure that, and I know that Comrade Lungu will disagree this, I can think that we must densify urban environment. The notion that we must de-densify, I think doesn't make sense. Because you will end up with thousands of urban sprawls every corner. A person works in Johannesburg but he stays in Mpumalanga because we want to de-densify areas. But if you build it in such a way that we maximize the fact that the resources, also job opportunities, but infrastructure that are in urban areas. Therefore, even Soweto Combat Army, I never understood why Soweto remains a flat area forever, four room, why you can't densify it and go up. Because resources are in Soweto, the more you go to Orange Farm and put resources, the more expensive can work. I thought the government at the policy level, that's what they should decide. But the colleagues who are dealing with policy will deal with those issues. My view, Chef, is that maybe these colleagues who are here would be a good idea one day before maybe the end of the year. Just for these joint committees and other committees, just go and see exactly what are we talking about. Because at least once we go and visit and oversight, but just to see exactly what are we talking about. But also talk to the people. Because if in my yard I got 10 families, each family in Alexander pays 2,000 rand. I got 20,000 rand. If you come in there and demolish and leave with 4,000 rand, I will never accept that. It's a natural thing. And then how do you deal with that is another question that we must address. I just thought that it would be a good idea for us to go visited a joint committees, oversight committee, another committee that are dealing with this matter. Would be a good idea that we do that before the end of the year, if possible. Then we can then come back, invite our colleagues who have done research, because this research is very important, at least for me, that we must interrogate it, but ourselves also, we do have experience. But because we can't have experience of every corner of South Africa, unless we visit it ourselves, I think we should do that, Chair. Then we can come and a little bit informed and raise some of the issues that I think that is. But I really accept and appreciate the men and women that are trying to assist us to come with policies to deal with these challenges of urbanization in general.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dagane. Honorable Baker?
Thank you, Chair. I think there's a few more factors that we haven't really looked at in the discussion report. The socio, well, obviously the economic factors are there, with the economic streams as was discussed, but the social services as well, with increased urbanization, increased backyard rentals, your schools, your health facilities, there's going to be increased pressures on that as well with increased urbanization. So those are factors that haven't been discussed here as well. How do we care for our aged? I mean, where I come from in Secunda last week, and in actual fact, the mere fact that we're having this discussion in the first place is that we have failed as government to provide adequate housing for the people, and we have to acknowledge that up front. Where we had a stayed-in by a group of old people, 70 and 80-year-olds, who have never ever received a BMG house. They've built their own shacks on vacant land, and they're sitting there with cardboard signs that they've made demanding housing from the municipality. They're living in backyards as well. It's that sector of people that we are not looking at as well. And in actual fact, in the community that I come from, we generally house our aged in our granny flats, and it's kind of a rotation. You grow up in the house, you get married, you move into the outbuilding, the granny flat, and as time goes by, you move into the big house, and the aged move into the granny flat. Kind of a rotation of the premises. Factors like that we need to take in. But more important for me is some of the suggestions that have been made here. For example, the additional three basic services, the strain that is going to put on the municipalities will be enormous. They already cannot cope with the three basic services and the demands that they put, the financial demands on the municipality. In actual fact, in Mpumalanga, currently, the government owes, COPTA owes Rand Water 21 million. Now you're going to put extra strain on the three basic services, financial strain on the municipality. It's not going to work. Infrastructure, we spoke about the infrastructure, additional infrastructure. The infrastructure is not, we cannot cope as it is. They're not maintaining, maintenance of infrastructure is not taking place. Now we're going to overload that infrastructure even more. We have to increase the capacity of infrastructure. Financial costs of that as well. And practical implementation, as the Honourable Member said, reality. But reality is subjective. Your reality, my reality, reality in KZN, reality in Secunda. No, it isn't. It's subjective. It's subjective. But the reality where I live is that we have constant breakdowns because of lack of infrastructure, lack of maintenance of infrastructure, poorly implemented infrastructure. And we spoke also of refuse removal, providing an additional bin. Well, the reality is that there is no refuse removal in many of the areas, as it is. So it's all these additional strains on the local government. And whilst we may not have all the solutions, this is a complex problem, but we have to look at all those finer, finer details and the strain that's going to put on the local government. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Beka. Honorable Kubisa.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think for me, the presentation provides a foothold or a springboard which may try to influence policy. It's no way a panacea to the problems of the country. But I want to try and be very simple, that the whole thing begins with planning. Because when you begin from there, you'll be able to read the future, try and be prognostic, read the future, read the population. Because most of the people now in urban areas come back away for various reasons. I'll cite one classical example, as Kawini Township. It was very, very small in the early 70s and 80s, and people began to flock into Eskawini because there were companies that were spring up like RBM, coal terminal, etc. And people went there. And all of a sudden, the township could not contain them. And then we saw one or two houses springing out where there was no planning at all. Then the municipality saw that there was a problem now. So they were running after the people. While they were trying to block those people, others were building on the other side. And all of a sudden, one other noticeable factor was that these people were building beautiful houses. So at the end of the day, the municipality was forced to ensure that they should be planning. In other words, you are asking people now, because people have seen the need for housing. Try to remove these on the other side, J section at the H section, they spring up. They are not building sheds, but they are building houses. You go to the same area at the moment, you'll find that they are beautiful houses and they keep on growing. So the municipality had to secure land for the people. That's why I'm trying to say it's a very huge issue. The paper is trying to speak to the police. It's an international phenomenon. For instance, if you go to countries like Argentina, Brazil, Chile, and others, you find the worst scenarios there. People building houses, trying to build houses, even along the rivers. The government will say, we're trying to chase people now because, I mean, it's like we're not reading the climate. That at such a point, people will need houses. That's where the problem is, Chair. I'm trying to say the issue of planning, it's very crucial. Reading the population, reading the times, of course, urbanization is going to be the issue. Whether you like it or not, most of the people will always flock to the urban areas in search of work or for whatever reasons. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kubisa. I think what we need to appreciate is the fact that the paper itself is just about provoking us to think and being able to say to ourselves, we cannot ignore what is in front of our eyes anymore. What must we do about it? It does, obviously, it becomes political and then people become hot under the collar, but we don't have to. We have to be very rational and look at what we need to address. So, for me, let's go back and let's look at the paper. Let's come with other ideas. We can, as Honorable Chairperson of the Committee, Honorable Ntakane said, we can then regroup after we have done even some visits and then discuss. One of the big things, Honorable Ntakane, is that, you know, United Nations every 20 years put together a conference called UN Habitat, and next year the main theme is about urbanization, and it will be taking place in Chile. Why? Because of the rapid urbanization that is taking place all over the world, and we have to deal with what is happening. So this paper, unfortunately, bad as it looks or unpolitical as it looks, it has to be dealt with. We have to go and look at what needs to be done. The only thing that I would, from the presenters, that I would want them to think about that when they come back, they share with us. The NDP talked about sustainable housing or sustainable human settlements by 2050. And here's the paper. How does it fit to that in terms of policy? That's all for me that I would love to hear as you mitigate this policy position, so that at the end, as we debate it moving forward, we are able to talk to it in tangent with what we are doing. I don't think we should labor the issue anymore. Let us appreciate the fact that the, the document has been presented. It will be it's an ongoing discussion. It is not the end and be all. It doesn't say this is what is going to be done, but unfortunately, a research has been done. A paper is in front of us. SALGA has commissioned a research. What do we do? That's all that I'm going to say. So I thought, before I say I'm closing, I saw the DPG of my department has got his hand up. Mr. Cheney, did you want to say something? Okay. Yes. Please, well. No, but I'm closing, you were late. So what I'm saying is that we will then separate committees will still discuss the paper, and we will meet again, and we will do continue to work on this. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, Mr. Mbaka, don't feel bad. It is an ongoing debate.
Sorry, sir. Sorry. Let me just say something. No. I think we must not panic because I came here to interrogate here. That's why I come to a meeting. But one thing, I'm going to say it to you, to the department, and you know this. There's been a number of research documents throughout SALGA Commission research in as far as housing models is concerned. Many. In rental housing and social housing and service have commissioned those. Even the problems are the reason, some of them are commissioned by SALGA.
Mm.
But we must not just say we'll do something about it. Because this discussion back here started as long as 2006, far away. Now how many years are counting? 10. There's still a discussion. Therefore, we must be able to say to you, the department, that you must look into the research being commissioned by SALGA and look at it and provide us a way forward in as far as what is going to happen. Because we always say, we'll deal with this. If I know Parliament has been here, we say deal. 10-10, we have not dealt with it.
No, thank you. That's what I was saying. Probably English, is not our first language.
Yes,
so we will interpret it differently, but that's exactly what the department is going to do. So when we come back, they would also be saying to us, what is it that the department is doing in terms of the policy paper from SALGA. On that note, thank you, Copter, for affording us. We will look at when we can do joint site visits, and we will interact, and then we will come back to you. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.